I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar, my plantation sugar, my plantation sugar, my plantation sugar. Ah, plantain, plantain, plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. This is your host, Dean, and as always, I am here with my co-host, the magnificent Coach. How are you doing, Coach? How are you feeling?
Assalamu alaikum. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Yeah. A lot of boiled piss on this fine Sunday, on this fine bank holiday Sunday, should I say. And we didn't even win. It's fantastic. God forbid we won.
I heard that Arsenal didn't entertain them. Oh. I didn't know that was the name of the game. I remember all those years when Arsenal was a very entertaining team that lost all the time. They told us we needed to be tougher.
Bottle and soft. And you know that old saying of, you know, goalposts being moved and all that? You know, it feels very apt. Incredibly apt.
But that's okay. So, we don't care, do we? We don't really care.
I could not, if I could describe to you the infinitesimal F-U-C-K I give, it wouldn't even, I'd be wasting your time. Seriously. It is non-existent. It's less than nothing.
Let's talk about some shit that actually exists. What were your expectations? Like, because we haven't been on in a while. Arsenal had a long 3-week break, was it?
Yeah.
19-day break in between their last game against... Porto,
Brentford.
I believe. Or was it the league game? Was Brentford?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was Porto. It was
Porto after that.
Yeah, it was Porto. Yeah.
You know, so we left on a good note, but it had been a while. We had the international friendlies. People got hurt. People got healthy. Yeah. We're not going to get into all that because we know that if you're listening to this at the time you're listening to this, you probably know what happened before the game. Yeah. It was a big game. It was the big game.
Yeah.
But strangely, Coach, I got to say, I felt really calm before the game. It was almost uncomfortable how calm I felt.
I was fine. I got my most anxious after Liverpool won. That was the most I was anxious about because I was thinking, okay, cool. I have no doubts about our... So my expectation level was Arsenal going to compete. That's all I expected. And I knew it was almost a foregone conclusion that Arsenal want to go to the Etihad and stand up and be men. I just knew it. I knew it ahead of time. Everything has been pointing towards everything about the players, the team, the body language, Arteta, his body language, the words he's using in his press conference, you know, confidence that he's answering these questions with, and, you know, almost a little bit of swagger, if you like. There's genuine belief. And I was like, okay, so also I'm going to go to Etihad and compete. That was my only expectation today. Whatever the result was going to be, whatever, but I just knew that City would leave that game thinking, Arsenal are here. You know, Pep's thinking, Liverpool. I know Klopp's going, but you know, it's not a one horse race. It's not going to be a one horse race because Arsenal are here. You know, at least for this season, anyway. You know,
but do you find it interesting that it feels as if people's memories reset every time one of these games is about to happen? Because as far as I'm concerned, these teams have played each other now 3 times this year. Arsenal won 2 of those games. And have now drawn the final one of these games. Well, in theory, because there might be a Champions League semifinal if things go a certain way, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah.
And to see certain commentators thinking of Arsenal as sort of like a bit of the soft touch here based on what happened last year, just removing the context from the situation, like it's a lot easier to score 4 goals when Rob Holding is marking Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
You know, like why do people ignore this context, Coach? What is it? Is it just Arsenal hatred or do people just have short memories?
I think so we can talk about this a little bit more later, but I genuinely think a lot of people are bitter and upset that Arsenal aren't a soft touch anymore. That's what it is. They're finding it hard to come to terms with. Teams that are in 11th and 12th place are upset that Arsenal aren't a soft touch anymore. Like everybody's vexed and pissed off, and it's like, didn't you see this coming? Genuinely, like, it's been in the making for a long time. Like, I've seen all the stats flying around. Arsenal have taken the most points against the better sides in the Premier League, i.e. the top five, top six teams. The most since Arteta's taken over, literally. For context, City have only beaten Manchester United in the top six this season. They're the only team that they've beaten. And United are crap, guys. Everybody beats United. But they haven't beaten us. They haven't beaten Liverpool. Haven't beaten Tottenham. Haven't beaten Villa. Well, they might beat Villa in the week, but at the time of recording, at least. So they
haven't beaten Chelsea.
Haven't beaten Chelsea. They didn't. They had two tries at this crap Chelsea team, by the way. So I think a lot of the time people are just so fixated on these things that they don't want to accept it. And it's like you kind of have to. It's almost like kind of how Arsenal fans had to accept that while we don't respect Chelsea, kind of thing, due to their cheating, they've manufactured their way, at the time at least, they manufactured their way to being a top side kind of thing. And it's just like in my head, I still look at them as the Chelsea side that are just crapping it, but. Simple fact is that they were a top side because of how they managed to keep their way towards it kind of thing. And now Arsenal are a side that is more recognizable to what a good Arsenal side looks like. People don't want to accept it. It's like, well, if you've been watching Arsenal for a certain amount of time, this is what a good Arsenal looks like. Unfortunately for you, you kind of have to get used to it. So,
because it's not changing anytime soon.
No.
Let's get into the game. The starting lineups, I think there was probably more to talk about with the City side because of the injuries to Kyle Walker and John Stones.
Yeah.
But short of that, even on the Arsenal end, there wasn't that much to report either. We were hoping Martinelli would make it. He didn't. So Jesus came in. Were you surprised by anything? Did you think maybe Trossard had a shot to start instead?
No, I knew. I had a feeling from Wednesday, Thursday, Jesus would start. You know, he didn't go away with Brazil. You know, he played against Brentford. He played against Porto. He was ready. Kind of thing. He was clearly ready. And I think he's generally such a good big game player. Even if he doesn't score, his influence is so, so good. Like, in terms of his work rate, basically. And I think in this game, he was absolutely needed. So, yeah, I had no issues with it. I wasn't really surprised.
You know, while we're here, let's just talk about his performance more generally. As you said, he's a big game player. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to score, but you can't miss his presence. He's just always busy.
No.
I guess the first question I want to ask you, like, well, he's had a stop-start season, Coach.
Yeah.
But I guess the question is, how did he look to you today, like physically? Did he look like someone that's going to be contributing big minutes for the rest of the season, or did he still look a bit one pace to you?
I think around the 60th or 70th minute, he started to look leggy, right? That's normal. You know, he's first starting God knows how long. But prior to that, he was everywhere. He was making sure that our off-the-ball shape stayed solid. And while there was a team effort kind of thing, he was essentially doing two things. Like, I saw him literally making up shielding Kiwior, you know, for a period. And then the moment we went into our mid-block, he tucked in. And it was just like, there's quite a few players around that can, you know, are versatile, can do those kind of things, but there's not many forwards that can do that. And not many forwards that have his attributes on the ball that can do that as well. So, yeah, I was really pleased, genuinely, with his performance. So,
I thought he was pretty good too. If anything, I mean, because I'm not going to criticize him for not scoring today, but the moments that we had in this game, for the most part, involved him. And I can't really knock a player, like, especially when I'm questioning his fitness, him being in those situations where he was one that could have made the difference today, I have to give him credit. I do think he probably should have gotten there on that Saka cross early in the second half.
Yeah.
I think that chance in the 7th minute from the Ben White cross, he at least needs to get that on target. I think a couple of times he can release the ball faster when he's in shooting positions, but he's a jinky majinky guy. We know how he is, you know, so I'm not going to criticize a scorpion for stinging somebody. That's what a scorpion is going to do, you know, so. But it was a great performance for a guy that really hasn't been playing that much, but he had been ramping up. But generally, it was a tense, cagey game. If anything, it kind of felt like it started a little more explosive than the game itself actually was. Was this a game you were expecting to watch?
No. And this is where I show the fact that I'm nowhere near being a professional coach. I know what Arteta's like, and I know my coach, and I know he's very much a terrorist at heart, if we're keeping a buck. He's a terrorist at heart. But I thought we'd be a little bit braver. But then after the first 5 minutes, like, okay, you know what? I understand. I actually understand. It's a title we're trying to win. We're not trying to prove that we're a better footballing side than Man City, even though I feel as if we seem to have more about us now than we did last year. But I definitely think, in fact, funny enough, I've got a question for you. But I definitely think it was a game that suited what we put out there, purely from the fact that, you know, we had 2 weeks off basically, and a lot of players had a lot of miles on them, so it made sense for us to just be solid. But I wanted to ask you, like, looking at City's defense, did you think Arteta would have had a change of heart at the last minute and be tempted, almost like the Green Goblin mask, and be like, let's just go for it, fuck it.
Oh, go for it generally?
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, so I think we have to give, and this is a strange thing to say about a team that's been as good as City for as long as it's been as good as they are, but we have to give City credit. I think Arteta coached a game where he was like, okay, we're going to have a bit of a passive press in their final third. We're not going to go in on them because they can play through the press.
Yeah.
Basically, we did this to them at the Emirates. We did it to them at the Community Shield. We just stood off them a little bit, blocked passing lanes. If they build up through the first or second third, we drop into a block, whether it's a mid block or a deep block. We just drop into that block and deny them central access. So that was the plan. When we get into the duels and we win the ball, we break on them.
Mm-hmm.
We try to make something happen. We make the moments count. That's where the game plan fell apart today.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to put that on the manager. The moments were there. We didn't make them count.
Yeah.
Saka didn't have his best game. He's clearly struggling with something. Hopefully he can. I'm a little worried about that in the long term, but hopefully that's not a big thing. But I thought it was just bounces, you know, like it was just bounces. Mm-hmm. We essentially took the risk out of the game and dared the team that's supposedly better than us to come beat us. And they could not beat us. And I'm not going to criticize a manager of an underdog, because no matter how, you can't have it both ways. Arsenal can't be a crap team where you're doing these combined 11s before the game, where one Arsenal player is making it in. Then they go and they play on the back foot because City are so good. They counter-press so well. Like, City were incredible in certain phases of the game today. As much as I want to give Arsenal credit defending really well, City forced us to defend. Matter of fact, I had the opportunity to listen to two different Odegaard interviews after the game, and he essentially admitted that the way we played wasn't necessarily the plan. Like, the plan was to be more efficient in those moments so we would have more moments. If you score one goal, then City has to play a little more adventurously. It gives you an opportunity to counter on them more often. When we had the moments to make things happen, we didn't make that happen. And it gave City confidence and they penned us in. So ultimately, I have no criticism of the way we played.
Yeah. I mean, I have, you know, that's a good point that you made about the fact that we didn't execute how we wanted to execute. But I will say there is no shame in things not going to plan at Etihad. Genuinely, so I can imagine, like, especially when we're just looking at it from these are the two best sides in the league or whatever kind of thing, there's a tendency to kind of over expect, if that's the word. You're unrealistic with certain things. Both teams, City know how to win a league. Arsenal know how to lose a league, basically, and
Arsenal know how to lose at the Etihad.
Yeah. Basically, and there's no shame in acknowledging, look, the history of this fixture in the last 8 years or whatever. I personally don't ever think there's much you can do wrong at Etihad if you keep a clean sheet regardless. So
yeah, I mean, this is a team that they clearly enjoy defending.
Mm-hmm.
They don't mind suffering, and I think we're in the entertainment business for sure, but I think what people find most entertaining is calling a team the champions. And generally, the way you win things is not by being pretty all the time. There are very few teams in the history of the sport that played amazing looking football for the entirety of the season. And you know, I do find it interesting from a philosophical standpoint. I think, you know, they've set up a bit of this dichotomy in the title race where it's like Klopp and Liverpool are willing to take risks.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they may concede more, but they're still winning games. And that's one approach. Meanwhile, Pep and Arteta are so scared of everything. They want to control everything. And
but we score the most goals and concede the least. So, yeah, whatever.
So there you have it. I mean, I was going to throw you a question, but you essentially just cut the question off at the knees. But I don't think there's any one way to do this. But I will argue that generally, if you don't concede a lot of goals, you will win more games. And as boring, you know, like none of us really grew up. I mean, we liked Paolo Maldini and Fabio Cannavaro and all them cats. But at the end of the day, you know, we're putting Ronaldinho on the shirt. There's a reason why some players cost more than other players. Like, it's easier to defend than it is to attack. It's just what it is. You know?
Yeah. I mean, Roy Keane actually said that after the game as well, ironically. But I was going to say, just to round up your point about things that go into plan, this is the key difference between not just Arsenal last season and this season, but Arsenal and a few other teams in the league. Arsenal genuinely have players that are adaptable, but then also have a system that's adaptable. And the fact that things didn't go to plan and we didn't panic and shit the bed and we rolled with the punches and made do with what we had kind of thing, that speaks volumes to me. Like, it's so encouraging. There's no negative spin I can put onto it other than the fact that I wish Liverpool dropped points. That's out of our control. Do you know what I mean?
And all you can ask from a team at this stage of the development is, you know, just show improvement, show development, show maturity. Today, we played the game we were in.
Yeah.
We didn't play the game we wanted to play. We played the game we were in. City were really good. Their press was, I wouldn't say their press was incredible, but we did go long a lot. We didn't really, I think Raya had line sets. I think he hit like 29 long passes in this game.
Yeah.
And obviously that was part of the strategy. We're just going to go long.
By the way, I think he's
It wasn't great. It wasn't great. Yeah. He slipped a lot early on in the game as well. He seemed a little jittery by his standards. Ultimately, again, as we talk through this, I'm not remembering a shot on goal from City. Mm-hmm. I'm not remembering a chance they created. I'm not remembering a hairy moment where I got nervous on my couch. Like, this was a defensive masterclass. So this is now three games in a row where Erling Haaland has had no sniff, no shots on goal, really?
Hey, listen, man. I kept on saying, I watched it with a couple of my mates, right? And I just kept on looking at KDB, and he's just a nasty man. A very, very dirty and disgusting man. Because I could see him fighting the CTE to spam crosses, right? So much so that there was a 50-50 ball in midfield and there was a transition that was on and he didn't even look up. He just span one time and tried to play it into space. He didn't even know where he was going. And it's just that level of nastiness that he has in his game, right? If that ball bounces through and it goes through to Haaland, everyone calls him a genius. Right, and he purely played the percentage ball there, hoping something would happen. And maybe if Rob Holding was there, something would have happened. But unfortunately, you know, Big Gabby and Saliba were there to make sure it didn't happen that way. But it was almost like City almost accepted that, look, we're going to need a bit of luck for it. We're not going to be able to break them down through the center of the pitch. We're going to need basically a cross to basically fall the right way, one way or the other.
Right.
I think they accepted that pretty much halfway through the second half, halfway through the first half. There was zero... You mentioned before there was zero central access, and I think it's so clever, but also so simple as well. City are the best team in the world in general, but the best team in the world at playing combinations through the center of the pitch where it's most congested. Doesn't matter who's on the ball, whether it's your big 6'3" center back, which is John Stones, or your 6'3" center midfielder, which is Rodri, or your 6'2" center midfielder, which is KDB. They're all good in tight spaces and playing through the center of the pitch, and if they don't have that space, it becomes a little bit more complicated for them. That's what you need. Make it a little bit more complicated because they take an extra touch. They think about it more. And then by the time they do that, guess what? You're back and you're organized again. Do you know what I mean? And that's what it's about.
Yeah, they were just playing the donut of sadness.
Yeah.
You know, like they couldn't get through the areas of the pitch they wanted to go through. And I think the interesting about City, or the most interesting thing and the most impressive thing about them most seasons is that's the way Pep always wants to play. Like no matter what people put up against City, he wants his team to have central access.
Yeah.
And that's genuine. I mean, that's how Liverpool won their game against Brighton today. I mean, McAllister kept getting chances at the edge of the D. He slid one into, I should pause something in there.
Yeah,
he slid one into Salah and it was a goal. And we just did not give them that space. KDB, it's interesting. I'm not going to say he's anywhere close to cooked. I'm sure there's more to come from him. But there were moments in this game, outside of him going up one-on-one late in the second half against one of Arsenal's substitutes, who is also physically cooked.
Yeah.
He really wasn't getting that burst on people that he normally gets. You know how he makes those half-space runs?
Yeah,
Yeah. And he couldn't get that separation today. And
so can I ask you a question? Did you see? I'm asking because I'm hoping you saw it. Right, I'm praying you saw it, but the matchup I've been waiting for, which feels like my whole life, right, was Sir Declan Rice picking up the ball, and he wanted to turn into space, but then KDB nicked it off him, and started running into space. But then guess what? He caught up to him. I got the ball back.
Ramon Pada.
It was the most beautiful thing, and it let me know that okay, if Rice could do that to KDB, he could do that to anyone. And then this made me so, because normally KDB gets that little bit of separation and he's gone, he's off. And Rice was like, no. Come back here. It was so good.
Yeah, it was an impressive moment. It was an impressive moment. It was written for us nasty folks, you know. But none of us are as nasty as KDB. Did you know that the D in KDB stands for Diddy? Fun fact.
Oh, I had no idea. But now it's all making sense now.
At halftime, did you have any thoughts? I mean, I think I was basically in the mode of, listen, wait for Pep to make a change. Unless we're tired. I had a brief thought that, okay, maybe we take Kivior off. Because I thought of our players, I have criticism for nobody. But if I was going to say someone was shaky in that first half, briefly, because Bernardo like got a nutmeg in on him one time, then a couple passes were misplaced. I thought Kivior was maybe not on the level and maybe the game was getting beyond him. But then we settled it down and he was fine too. But after that, I really couldn't think of anything else beyond, okay, at some point, maybe 60 minutes in, bring Gabby Jesus off, Martinelli on. But it didn't quite pan out that way. What were you thinking at halftime, Coach?
Halftime for me was just, you know what, this time last year, it was like one or two goals down already. I think it was it was KDB and John Stones. It was 2-0 at halftime.
The VAR, that's when I turned that shit off.
Yeah, literally, the title was over in the first 45 minutes, and the title was very much on in the first 45 minutes today. So, progress, that's all we asked for. It was progress. Like, okay, cool, we've done the first part of our job. Now, let's see what we got in the second half. You know, are we going to stand up? Are we going to make it? Are we going to do it when it matters most? Because obviously you can't win it in the first half particularly, but you can absolutely lose it in the first half kind of thing. And we made sure that we didn't lose it in the first half. And it was to me personally, I think it was a perfect platform, you know. And you know, listening to the comments after the game, like, it actually kind of makes sense. You know, we tried to obviously do certain things, didn't come off for it, but we didn't suffer too much for it. We genuinely didn't. Ake had that chance
from the corner
and literally that was it.
Yeah, then he went off shortly afterwards for Rico Lewis. I was wondering if that was gonna cause any grand change in what was happening on the City side of things, but it really didn't change much. It was just very technically gifted players all taking turns to try to gain central access to Arsenal's block, and none of them making any progress.
No.
I will say, I'll ask you this, Coach, who on the City side, you know, individual performance wise, who impressed you on their end? Because they did play well, they just didn't create it.
Vardio, I think, was probably their best player, if I'm being honest. Especially in the first half, I thought he did pretty much a modern fullback. You know what? He looked like a left footed Ben White. That's the best way I can describe him today. He looked, you know, physically, he was fine. Obviously, Saka wasn't at his best. I would have liked to have seen Jesus go up against him again, because in the first game we had them against him this season, Jesus cooked him, battered him, physically, on the ball, everything. Couldn't really do much against him.
To cut you there, because that's a really interesting point, because I was thinking there was a bit of an argument that I saw on Twitter about maybe flipping the wingers for this game for that reason, because of that matchup. Because Jesus definitely got the better of him at the Emirates. Yeah. But then I'm thinking to myself, later in the game, and we'll get to this, when Trossard came on, he was on what is the side he usually comes in on, the left side, and Martinelli had come on for Saka. And I was thinking to myself, you know what? It would make sense to switch them, because Martinelli usually plays on the left. That's where he's used to. That's his area of the pitch.
Yeah.
Trossard is a more versatile.
And he's got a really good left foot.
Right. But even so, I felt like the moment in the second half, let's just talk about it now, the moment where Trossard should have just crossed it right away. Yeah. And he didn't.
Yeah.
I felt like that's what it cost us. So I'm like, I can't ask for that to be switched, then also ask for Jesus and Saka to switch it. Like, I don't think it makes sense logically to criticize a manager for that.
No, of course not. No, you're absolutely right. But I think, who do you, to be honest, I actually want to ask, who do you think is the, at least in the first half, from Arsenal, who do you think was our best player? Because obviously you've spoken about Kiwi, or, you know, looking a bit shaky, but I have one or two contenders, but I want to know if, you know, if they match up.
Well, I got to give a lot of guys credit. I thought the triumvirate, you know, basically Declan Rice, Saliba, Gabriel, I thought they were magnificent. Mm-hmm. But the guy that really stood out in that first half was Ben White.
Yeah.
Ben White to me was, for me, probably overall, my man of the match, if I'm being honest. Like, if I'm picking my man, it was him, because he provided offensive threat.
Yeah.
He overlapped. He inverted. Nothing went down his side.
No.
When Grealish came on later, Grealish did look dangerous, but nothing happened. Bernardo gave it a shot at him. Nothing happened there. Like, so I think overall, like, not just in the first half, I would say Ben White was my man of the match.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. That's fair. That's fair, for sure.
Who was another contender for you? I feel like you had a couple candidates.
Is it unfair just to talk about Declan Rice for the rest of the pods? Because,
you know what? You might as well. He costs $100 million. We'll talk about that.
Oh, man. Like, those of you that know me know that I don't really, the only white man that I love, you know, close, anywhere close to this much, is maybe Arsene Wenger. And if not Arsene Wenger, then Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, like, there isn't much, basically, is what I'm saying. But I think at some point we have to kind of just start talking about Declan Rice like a, not like, oh, I didn't know he was this, and no, like, more talk about, if he does something that's below par, we're shocked more than, oh, when he does something that's exceptional, because he seems to be doing exceptional things every match day, like multiple exceptional things every match day, with and without the ball.
He's an exceptional footballer.
it's almost, and I think we've spoken about this before, maybe we haven't, but I've certainly mentioned it in my group chat, but I personally think that we need to do something about Pep Guardiola and prison. You know, they need to have a conversation at some point of just, you know, being together. I don't know, because he wanted this demon, and he wanted to platform him so that Rodri can keep doing what he's doing, and so that Declan Rice can essentially just be a marauding maniac.
And, bro, it would be like adding N'Golo Kante to, like, the Centurions.
Yeah, like, what is that? Like, why would you do that? Like, do you not want to have some sort of competitive, you know, just, you know, some sort of competitive sportsmanship, if you like, you know? Because if you bought Declan Rice, City literally are 10 points clear.
That,
there's no, make no mistake about it. We talk about Haaland's goals, winning them, all this. No. Declan Rice is that good, where he's made us essentially so secure with and without the ball for us to be title contenders. But if you add him to the City team, they're 10 points clear. That's it. They don't lose against Aston Villa. They beat Liverpool home and away. Probably, like, you know, you saw when Declan Rice went up against McAllister, he ate him for lunch. You know, so, like, he's so fantastic. And one of the key things that I really, really want to home in on today is that on the ball, despite City's counter-press and the fact that they were cutting off so many passing lanes, he was taking 2-3 touches to open up his body to look for the pass. And he was finding the pass. It was so refreshing to see, genuinely. Like, he doesn't look like an England player that's going to be playing for a Southgate team. He doesn't deserve to play for Southgate, to be honest. Southgate doesn't deserve a player like him. It's really I'm doing him such a disservice for even thinking that Southgate could potentially use him in the right way, because he won't. He's got everything. He's pretty much a complete midfielder. Seriously.
Yeah. Okay, so while we're on the topic, well, how would you compare him to Rodri?
Rodri is the more subtle player and has the better passing range, for sure. He also probably has a marginally better first touch, but I don't think there's much in it.
Nah.
And he turns quicker and better on the ball. But I generally think everything else, Declan Rice is at least as good as him at everything else.
I think he's better than him at winning
the ball.
Well, for me, it's this simple. Rodri is better on the ball, but the gap between him and Declan Rice on the ball is maybe like 10%.
Declan Rice
is better off the ball, but the gap between them off the ball is like 40%.
Yeah,
like, Declan Rice is so much better than him off the ball.
Yeah, like, it closes the gap on them as players so much so that. Offer top managers, either of them, and one manager will take Rodri, the other will take Rice. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it'll just be like, there won't, you know, you can't really fault a manager for taking either of them.
Honestly, they're playing for the right manager.
Yes,
They're both terrorists on the low. Yeah. But because Pep does it with the ball, people don't give him his credit for being a terrorist. This man is the most paranoid manager in world football.
Yeah.
That's why he's so good, because he's afraid of not having the ball. You know? Like, people don't give him enough credit for being a sicko, because he wanted Declan Rice, people. Imagine what that city would look like off the ball.
It would be 90% possession every single game.
Like, they would just change field tilt from field tilt to Man City. They would just call it Man City. That'd be the name of the stat moving forward, because no team is seeing their box the entire season. It's crazy. And shout out Declan Rice, man. Like, just as a general point, like, he's like the anti-Kevin Durant.
Mm.
Like, looking at the landscape and realizing that if I go to City, we can shut shit down forever.
Mm-hmm.
And going, you know what? I'm going to do something else. He deserves credit for that. And I know I'm an Arsenal fan, so I just feel great about that. But just as a man, as a person who cares about sport and competition, shout out to Declan Rice for giving us a season to be interested in, to care about. Because he could have made a different choice, and this shit could have been over as soon as Serie A was over. So shout out that guy.
And one final point on Rice, actually. He's done a lot of talking in the last week. So I've read like two or three different interviews from him, right?
Yeah.
And so much of what he was saying, he's not that he's just saying it because, oh, I'm an Arsenal and, you know, Arsenal are a big club. You know how United plays, like, oh, it's United or whatever. No, he's saying all these things, talking about, I want to be here, we want to be in these moments, you know, stuff happened last year, you know, we're a top side, you know, he doesn't mind us being underdog, we're going to show that, when all those things. He's saying that, and then guess what? He's backing it up. He's not just saying it for the sake of it. No, he's not even like he's saying it for the sake of it. Sorry. He's saying it knowing that he's going to back it up. It's a foregone conclusion for him. Even if the rest of the team don't turn up, he's turning up himself. He knows he's turning up.
Pretty much. And that's, I think, at the end of the day, that's the beauty about having him at the club.
Yeah.
You essentially know that as long as he's on the pitch, the team is not giving up.
No.
Yeah. And that's not to say that the team used to give up in the past, but I just know it can't happen. I know the team is not collapsing. We may lose the game, but it's not because we collapsed or we gave up or, you know, we were physically outdone. It's like, no, the better team beat us.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay. As long as we work hard and we try and we do all that shit, that should be the bare minimum from a sports team. Yeah. And Declan Rice brings that base standard. Like, some people have the right mentality, but they don't have the physicality to push that stuff. He has everything. He's just fantastic player. I'm glad we have him. We should give West Ham more money, but fuck them niggas. Saka didn't have his best game, but I wanted to point out that what I think was the best chance that we talked about earlier that Gabby Jesus should have converted came from Saka.
Yeah.
Like, even on a day when everyone agrees that it was an off day for him, I think he created the best chance in the whole game.
If I had to ask, what percentage do you think he was fit today?
I'm going to go with somewhere like 70% at most.
No, I think it was lower than that. I genuinely think
he looked bad, man.
He was pushing at most 50% fit. His physical level was so high that he can do a job for you defensively, but the offensive output is gonna go, basically.
Like, even defensively, he wasn't as sturdy as he usually is. Yeah. You know, he was there, but he wasn't in the duels like that. Like,
I mean,
that's why I'm worried. Like, do you think it's more of a fitness thing that he was recovering from? You know, because I'm like, if he's playing at like 40%, let's call it 40-50% today. Are we that desperate that we're going to play Saka at 40-50% when he might get injured again? Like,
boy, you know, we just spent time calling Pep a terrorist. I think Arteta is also a terrorist when it comes to Saka as well. Like, he's been using him like a bar of soap, man. Like, really, he might be Thibs, bro.
What is he going to do though? We don't, what else we got out there?
I mean, put it like this. I'll be very shocked, right, if he plays the entire game against Luton, whether he starts or comes off the bench. I'll be very shocked if he plays the entire game against Luton, for sure.
He looked very jaded out there.
Yeah, Arteta did say that he came off because of fatigue, but I don't know if I believe that. I feel like there's probably a bit more to it. He hasn't trained at all for the last 2 weeks as well.
Yeah, I think he said something like fatigue in the area, if that makes any sense. So meaning, because they mentioned a bit of a muscle strain type issue. So generally, when you come back from those, if you overload the area with, you know, basically just running a whole bunch or playing football or whatever you're doing, whatever activity it is, then you risk a repeat of the injury. So maybe it was one of those things where he was running around and he kind of felt like, I feel tired in that area that I've been rehabbing for the last 3 weeks furiously. It's time to get off, you know. So That said, the pattern of the substitutions, I knew the substitutes that were coming based on what I know about the manager. I knew Kivior was going to come off for Tomiyasu once Doku came on. I knew that was happening for sure because I wasn't about to watch Kivior go up against Doku. Neither was Arteta. Then Five came on for Jorginho. I thought he was really good on the ball, but I think a lot of he actually gave me a bit of a flashback to this stadium from last season, the 4-1. When Kevin De Bruyne ran off him at one point and hit that spam cross.
Kept on running off him. Like, I think KDB might have had the easiest game of his career last season. It was that bad.
I mean, it was. Yeah, I'm going to criticize the guy that got done in the game, but ultimately, I can't really divorce that really shitty performance from the fact that Rob Holding was behind him and was too cowardly to actually get into duels with Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
Rob Holding lost everything. Everything bounced off that dude into KDB's feet.
Can I ask, do you think this is a good segue then to talk about our centre-backs? Because, look, one of them got man of the match. I don't know if he deserved it, but I just know that Haaland probably he probably hates the sight of light-skinned French talkers. Like, both our centre-backs speak French, obviously, but...
He probably just hates niggas. I mean, he's fucking hates niggas at this point, because I'm sorry, like, if a motherfucker locked me up for 3 games straight and is barking in my ear the whole time, calling me all kinds of bitches, I'd be pissed too.
He told him. It was so crazy. Gabriel told him after he dived in the after a cross, he told him straight up, he said, stop that. Like, do you know how... it's like a father talking to his child. Like, I don't even talk to my cat like that.
It's like, be a man. Be a fucking man. Stand on your feet and fucking face me like a man, you bitch. What's wrong with you?
It was a masterclass in how to do, because yes, remember, Haaland will bully every other centre back pairing in the league. You know, he'll put them through the ringer, a little bit like Giroud used to. He'll put them through the ringer physically, and then he'll get a chance. You know, he'll get a chance from a cross or through ball, and he'll finish it. Cool, no problem. But these guys that weren't giving him anything, it's like normally you try your hand at one centre back, don't get enjoyed, and you try the other one. But he kept on bouncing back between both of them. But he's not getting joy of either of them. He's almost like he would quite literally start being a rock and a hard place. And it was hilarious to see because neither of the centre-backs wanted to even give him an inch. Roy Keane, again, called him, basically said that, you know, on the ball, he looks like a League Two player. And while I think that's incredibly harsh, in terms of the scaling and the quality of the Premier League, I'm not going to use the best striker in the league, but look at the quality that Ivan Toney has on the ball compared to Erling Haaland. Do you know what I mean?
I think we've done this a few times on the pod already, the main pod, this pod, but he's a good player. He's a good footballer. He will never be the best footballer.
No.
He should never win a Ballon d'Or.
No.
And this is nothing personal. It's like, listen, man, you're good at one thing in the game.
Yeah.
Like one, and you're really good at it, and you're really efficient, and we respect that. But at the end of the day, man, like, if you're not doing that one thing, what are you doing? Mm. Like, what's the difference between him and Aubameyang? Aubameyang could give you some wing action. He could drive at people, you know, go through a man, you know, give you something. Haaland is not really giving you that either, you know. So,
because he's so physically blessed, especially when he's running into space, like he's just consistently going to be a threat. See, his actual gift is the thought of what if. That's Haaland's gift. I think that's the best way I can describe him. We already know what's going to happen if he gets a chance, you know. I wouldn't say 9 times out of 10. Let's say maybe 7 times out of 10. We know what's going to happen because he's missed some sitters. But you know what's going to happen with Haaland, kind of thing. And I think the fear factor of that is what lends to his actual his legend, but also lends to the way teams play him. But if teams play without that fear and think, fuck it, you know what I mean? Like, if we're going to go in for 50-50s kind of thing, especially with someone like Gabriel Saliba, more often than not, I'm not being funny, Demboy is going to win against Haaland. Not everybody can do that.
Yeah, not everyone can. That's the issue. I think I'm trying to think of the center backs in the Premier League. I would say it's the two guys at Arsenal, Van Dijk, maybe even that Kwanzaa kid. I like Kwanzaa quite a bit. I would say Konate for sure. Braithwaite at Everton as well.
Yeah,
I like that kid. Then maybe not Lewis Dunk. I wanted to say that after the last two. After Lukaku did
maybe
it, like
maybe Pinnock. When he's fully fit, when he's back, but there aren't many centre backs that can match or even better Haaland physically in the Premier League. They just aren't. And if you've got enough quality in midfield to essentially restrict the chances that he gets and make the passes that he receives really difficult. You get the edge on him straight away because you know his technical quality when he's back to goal is below par. It's just not good. There's so many players in the Premier League that are better than him on the ball, whether they're defenders or strikers or midfielders. There's a lot of them kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, he's gonna get you your 25 league goals, no problem, kind of thing. But in a game like today, you know, especially when the team sets up that way, it's gonna be so difficult for him to have some sort of effect. I mean, if I remember correctly, last season he scored twice against Arsenal. The first goal at the Emirates, they were already 2-1 up, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So Arsenal chasing the game. The second goal, City already 3-1 up. Do you know what I mean? We're chasing the game. So that's, you know, he relies on space kind of thing. And it's fine, you know, City have all the creators in the world, so they're going to keep creating for him. But if you're playing against Gabriel and Saliba and Rice, you're going to need more than that, man. Seriously.
Yeah, you know, so games like today beg the question, you know, like, because to talk about the team that we support, Arsenal.
Yeah.
There's a lot of chatter, like, what we're going to do in the summer. And we really shouldn't be talking about that right now. There's a lot to play for this season. But there's a lot of chatter about this striker thing.
Yeah.
And I just don't view it as, like, if I'm ranking the order of importance of things mm-hmm. Arsenal needs to do over the summer, it's not, the striker is actually low on the list for me, man. Because of what we see with someone like Haaland.
Yeah.
Where when you have a single point of failure, like City this season and last season are designed to create chances for one player.
Mm-hmm.
Other guys can get in where they fit in, but for the most part, the job is to feed Erling Haaland. If he mm-hmm. runs into Gabriel and Saliba every week, which obviously won't happen because mm-hmm. Arsenal is a really good fucking team. But if you were to run, you know, technically, all of a sudden City has a problem.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want Arsenal to make an investment that requires us to then change the way we play to serve one guy.
So
make that transfer a success.
So here's the thing. I've done a complete 180 on a certain striker. I won't mention their name. I won't mention anything about him other than the fact that I think...
Kai Havertz.
No. Kai Havertz is going to play for Arsenal for a long time. He's going to play a lot of games for us. But in terms of us bringing in an actual striking reinforcement, when it's time to talk about them, we will. But just know I've done a complete 180 and he already has a really good relationship with someone at the club already. That's all I'll say on that. But I think he's probably our most sensible option. And he absolutely offers way more off the ball when he's not scoring, basically. And I think that's what it comes down to. Again, we mentioned earlier the adaptability of the mm-hmm. team kind of thing. And this kind of player is what Arsenal would probably need. But yeah, Haaland overall, fantastic goal scorer. But you come up against some real defenders who don't play that shit, basically, you're gonna struggle. You just are. The proof is there now. Like,
like put it this way, man. Like if Arsenal came up against Mbappe, I'd be far more fucking terrified than I've seen my team close Haaland out 3 games in a row. I'm sorry. Mbappe scares me way more because he actually can do shit with the ball at his feet and doesn't have to wait for other people to create for him.
I mean, he does scare me, but I mean, I've seen Saliba, you know, really, really give it to him as well. So I don't know. I don't know, man. You know, it's...
Hey, listen. Whenever he wants to dance, he knows where to find us.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of him. I'm just saying he scares me more than Haaland. But another scare me. I'm an Arsenal fan. I don't have to be scared of shit.
Yeah.
I got Mikel Arteta as my coach, man. He's a fucking terrorist, man. I ain't worried about nothing. I thought the conclusions again was pretty comfortable. I don't feel like we need to like dig in too much. Everyone that's listening to this probably watched the game. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, not a lot happened, which is how both of these managers tend to like their games, unless mm-hmm. the things that are happening are them scoring goals.
Yeah.
Everything else can be shut down. That said, coach, you got really fascinated by the Bernardo Silva interview after the game. You thought he made some really interesting points and you liked what he talked about.
Yeah, man. I think I'll tell you what, right? I know Susanna's probably listening to this as well. We all hate Bernardo. You hate him, especially obviously he played for Benfica, but he's such a little rat, a genuine rat on the football pitch, and he gets away with it. So him and Rodri get away with it so much because they have an innocent face. They pull the nice guy act kind of thing. And he does a lot of really nasty things. But boy, forget his footballing ability. The guy understands the game of football to a ridiculous level. He probably might end up being a coach or assistant coach. His understanding of the game is stupendously high, and it's why he can play in like six different positions, no problem, because he just understands what it takes to deliver. You know what I mean? And the way he spoke about Arsenal and what we've done, and in contrast to what City were trying to do, he must have been the most frustrated person on the pitch, because he understands what's happening, but he can't really do much to fix it, basically. So he noticed straight away that whenever Ortega had the ball, Arsenal would go man for man, not super aggressive, but we'd go man for man kind of thing. And then if the ball dropped for you guys in midfield, which especially in the first half, Arsenal were quite poor, I think, in picking up a second ball, which is a little bit uncharacteristic. I think that's what probably lended to a little bit of the jitteriness. But the moment you guys did that, it happened straight into the mid block straight away. And if you guys made us turn and face our own goal, then guess what? You're just going to go into a deep block, and that's it. We weren't really trying to play offsides. I think in the first 5 minutes, we tried to play one offside. Haaland went through on goal, basically. And then that was it. We realised, okay, cool. You know what? It's not going to work today, basically. And we adapted almost straight away. And he was just like, Arsenal, look, in terms of our rhythm, we're a top side. But the rhythm, our rhythm of our defending, it matched what City were doing in the moment almost every time, and it made it so difficult for them. And you could see, you know, he was, you know, he got his little 1v1 duels kind of thing, but then when he got his head up to look, there was minimal options. And it's just so, it's so refreshing to have a player really talk about what he was experiencing, what his team was experiencing. And then obviously he had a little jab saying, look, we used our wingers as fullbacks, so sometimes it was a back six, but okay, so what? That's we're in a title race now, right? Arsenal have battered teams the entire season, what it feels like, but especially in the second half of the season. When you go away to the treble winners and a team that's won three in a row kind of thing, give them their respect, regardless of how they got there, which you all know how they got there, but still give that to players that are on the pitch, give them that respect, because if you don't, you'll probably get beat and get beat badly. But he accepted that, look, Arsenal are a top team, we're intense. And he kept on mentioning the fact that we're really physical. And I think that is the key thing here. For everything that's happened, Arsenal are, to my mind, probably the best team in the league, at least from a physical standpoint. I really don't... I said it to you guys in the group. I back our wingers to do their job, basically. And I don't feel as if we were outmatched physically today at all. Whereas a lot of the time in the last God knows how many years, we've been outmatched physically by some really poor teams, but they were just better than us physically. That doesn't happen anymore. And games like this, these little things matter. Like, the edge matters so damn much. So yeah, really, 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 like, good interview. I don't know if you guys seen it, but you should. Like, he offers some really good insight in like 2 minutes.
Pep got a question during his interview.
Yeah.
Which was essentially, what do you do about these deep blocks?
Yeah.
To which he responded, I don't know, kill somebody. have we reached a point in the game where even the best minds in the game can't really figure out what to do about the lack of space in the final third anymore?
Well, here's the thing. Kovacic, in the 46th minute, had a really good shot that went just wide, basically from about 25 yards, yeah. I think I want to say.
Yeah, it was a nonsense. The whole time I was like, whatever, nigga.
Yeah,
but there's no curl on that shit, boy.
But that's my point. That's the answer. We might see a renaissance of long-range belters now to open up the game, because there is no space, what do you actually do? You know, you're going to keep working the ball, playing in a donut of sadness kind of thing. You're going to keep working it, and you're not really going to manufacture anything. You're going to turn over the ball, and now you could potentially be in danger, especially if a team potentially starts Martinelli. Do you know what I mean? One ball and he's gone. So maybe take a chance and shoot from distance. I don't know. I think that's one solution for sure.
For sure. I mean, we did see North London derbies ago, we saw that Arteta, this was when Conte was still coaching Spurs.
Yeah, last season.
And was essentially that, listen, the space is going to open up right in front of their block because they're going to double our wingers. Just lay it off for the unrushing midfielder who happens to be number five. And he had a bunch of those opportunities before he scored one.
Yeah.
And he scored like two more of those later in the season as well. So
yeah,
if we'll see the comeback of it, just depends on the players available and who can actually do that kind of work. One more on the interviews. Arteta, during his interview, got a question that essentially prompted the response. Well, basically it was essentially like a backhanded compliment. Like, yes, you guys defended well, but you were really deep. Was that the intention type thing?
Mm.
And how do you transmit that message to your players? That kind of question. Yeah. And here's your response with essentially clarity. You need to have clarity in the fact that you're going to come here, and when you lose the ball, you have to be willing to run for 30 passes from the other team.
Yep.
In Man City, and try to get the ball back. And when you get the ball back, if you don't keep it, then you have to run for another 30 passes. And you need to have the clarity to understand that that's what you have to do to get something from this place.
Yeah.
I think that essentially just speaks to his philosophy, coach. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, if there's one thing about Arteta's philosophy, is he understands when, I don't want to use the word beat, but he understands when his team is beat, basically, in the sense that if we can't do it this way, we're going to have to find another way, kind of thing. So I think he and the players have learned to enjoy when they suffer, basically. I think that's the key thing here. They've learned to enjoy when they suffer, and they've learned to manage it in a way that they don't go to pieces. They just accept that for these next 5-10 minutes, we're going to be under it. So learn to love these conditions. I forgot the name of the boxer, right? But there's this, I have it on my phone, but this really, really cool video of a trainer talking to a boxer during the game. And he says, we're firemen. We enjoy the fire. We're comfortable in the fire. We control the fire, kind of thing. Right? And I don't know if you've seen it before, but
I probably have.
But that's essentially what Arteta is telling these players, showing these players, and what these players are now comfortable with. We're accepting at times that, look, Rodri, KDB, not Foden because he was crap today, but whoever else, are going to be running around like maniacs, popping the ball around the corner and stuff like that. And you have to do your best to just stop it and keep stopping it until you gain territory in the game again. That's all it is. You know, there's no shame in that. It's Man City at the Etihad. They took apart the team that's won the Champions League 14 times last season in such a manner that it looked like they were playing a League Two team. So what do you want to say?
I can't believe they did that to Real Madrid. I really can't believe they did that. They should have given them the trophy right then and there, to be honest. That was fucking intense.
Yeah.
Shit, coach. I think it's, again, fascinating to sort of bring this full circle. I went into this game without a lot of fear, maybe even a little confidence that we could maybe do something big.
Yeah.
I'm far from disappointed. I think it's really flattering as an Arsenal fan, because I have, you know, certain Arsenal friends who are a little disappointed that we didn't do it, that we didn't beat them.
Which
is a good thing. I think it's really great that we've raised our standards to such a point that some fans can feel confident enough to be like, hey, we should have won that game.
Yeah.
And while I respect that, I think we need to focus on what we have,
which
is a point from the Etihad. We haven't done that in so long. Not since Santi Cazorla and Olivier Giroud did it those years
ago. Well, the last time we did it, for context, Thierry Henry made his Sky Sports debut on that Sunday. I will never forget. He made his Sky Sports debut on that Sunday, guys. So, that's all I have to say on that. It was that long ago.
And as a result, you know, even though this team has made a lot of improvements and are clearly very good, we need to be thankful for what we have. We need to show a little humility here. I mean, like, getting a point away to the defending treble champions is never going to be a bad result. Yeah. Getting 4 out of 6 points from City is never going to be a bad thing. Getting 4 out of 6 points from Liverpool is never going to be a bad thing. So while I understand the disappointment, because I felt like if we were sharper in the moments, I believe we created the better moments in this game, we definitely would have won it. But we did it, and we got a point. We didn't lose.
Yeah,
and we're going to take a lot of confidence from this.
I think the boys know
that essentially they may or may not win the league. That'll be decided in 9 games. But what you can say for sure is that ain't a team head-to-head better than Arsenal in this league. Fulham has better results against us than the best teams in this league. West Ham has a better win-loss record against us than the best teams in this league this season. So that's worth something.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think it's such a good point. I feel like it cannot be understated. There was a period of time here where it wasn't just Man City, where Arsenal just couldn't buy a win against a top four side, let's say. Arsenal wouldn't win against any of the other top four sides. We just wouldn't. We'd make our way into the top four by beating the crap out of the rest of the league. But when it came to the big games against the top four, Arsenal would get a draw here or there, but would lose the rest.
Yep.
Now we've got 8 points against Man City and Liverpool. They've laid one jab on us each this season. We've hit them both with knockout punches, uppercutted the crap out of them this season, right? However much way you want to put it, we've hit them with knockout punches. they've got one or two little jabs on us. That's the bottom line. This is what people are going to need to get used to. In these big games, Arsenal are going to start going into them favourites. Like, that's what it is now. And I don't feel like it's going to make us play worse or be, you know, or make us, you know, lose those games kind of thing. It's just that the perception and the standards have changed. Arsenal now are a team that when Man City or Liverpool come to the Emirates, they're thinking, do you know what? We'll take a point today. That's what it is now. That's the bottom line. I mean, we've gone through two seasons now. Klopp hasn't beaten us in the league in 2 years now. Guardiola has played us three times this season and hasn't won once. We're moving forward. There's nothing to be negative about. And for the opposition fans, obviously don't listen to this, but just in general, accept it. Literally just accept it. That's what you have to do. Football is help me say this, cyclical. There we go.
Cyclical people.
Yeah. English is not my first language, clearly. But that's what it is. Arsenal now are a team that we might end the season without anything, which I kind of doubt anyway, but it's coming. Accept it. Literally, it's coming. That's all I have to say. Like, we're doing all of the right things. All the signs are there. It's that simple.
Or don't accept it. It's happening anyway. So, you know, you're going to have to deal with it one way or the other.
Yeah.
In any event, Coach, I don't see any reason to ruin the rest of this podcast with my inane rambling. So you know what to tell the people.
Peace. And much love to you.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah. Plantain, plantain. Plantain, plantain.